Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, joined first tonight by Greg Ducharme. Gregers, good to see you.
What's going on, boys? December's here. What an event. That event got kind of strange towards the end there. But big win there. So it was a fun weekend, fun watch.
Kyle Porter is here. KP, hello, sir.
Hello. I'm just looking up different kinds of peats on the internet. We were talking off before we came on, and you referenced Swingin' Pete, mm-hmm. which is the Oklahoma State golf logo. And Pete is all over the place. I just texted you guys. There's a school of fire protection and safety Pete. There's a veterinarian Pete where he's wearing like this, these like scrubs and he's got a clipboard in hand. So, yeah, my alma mater is going to the, I don't even know what the name of the bowl is. It's like the old Cactus Bowl, but hey, at least we've got a bunch of Pete's to market all over the place.
What's nice is Vet Pete has a white coat that is wide enough to go around his very wide pants. What are those called?
Oh, those are the what are those called?
Chaps.
There we go. Yeah, good call, Greg.
There we go.
And those chaps do not affect Swing and Pete. Yeah.
A Pete aficionado over there.
Oh, gentlemen. The reason we were talking about Swing and Pete, who is obviously associated with Oklahoma State University, is because Victor Hovland has just successfully defended his title at the Hero World Challenge. 7th career win worldwide. 3 official PGA Tour wins, 2 Hero wins. It's kind of a weird little thing. Another 2 on the DP World Tour. Greg, it was a little bit scary coming down the stretch. I think I only took like 2 breaths from the final couple of holes there, but he was able to get the job done.
Yeah, it for a while. I mean, really, it looked like his for a majority of the week. He looked great. The cool thing about this, before we get into what happened late on the back 9, is this is one of those golf courses where typically I would stay away from a Victor Hovland when he's won it back to back years. So there you go. But because of the short
game
areas,
come to the first cut for all your betting advice.
But it's because of the short game. And this kind of grass, these kind of really tight lies would concern me with a Victor Hovland. But he's found some really interesting ways to, one, I think he's just gotten better. His short game is just simply better, which is a great sign for him. And I was also really impressed with his ability to putt from off the green with some of those pretty severe swales. So I was really impressed with what he did around the greens all week. I saw some real improvement with his pitching technique, and it's far more comforting as a fan than it used to be. So really creative stuff. And I think that played a big role in why he was able to get the job done this week.
He started leaning into that Texas wedge. It feels like at the Open Championship, KP, where it was kind of easy to do that. And it seems like he's pretty comfortable with it moving forward. The other thing is, I mean, statistically, he has made a significant improvement around the greens over the last 6 months or so. The one thing that he would tell you himself has kind of given him troubles to start his professional career, it still gets talked about, but that's not necessarily what the stats say.
I would actually love for you to pull the stats pre-open and post-open. And, okay. And you know, those stats, the around the green stuff, it can yes. be a little bit
hairy,
wonky, especially with a pretty small sample size like that. But even with a bigger one, I think, I mean, Victor Hovland might be the best ball striker in the world. And I think that that still goes overlooked. Like he was playing at a really elite level for several years. And his short game was like bad. Like it wasn't average. It was bad. If you looked at his putting and his around the green stuff combined. And he was still able to play at that level because his ball striking is, I mean, who's a better ball striker than him? Rom.
That might be the list.
Is that the whole list? Maybe Rory the second half of 2022, but that's the company that you're in. And, you know, I think it, to me, it speaks to, and I don't, you can read the numbers there, but if he is just like a middle of the road, short game guy, which is probably what we saw this week. We don't have detailed numbers, but he's going to win a lot. I mean, I think the thing that gets overlooked about this tournament, Greg, is like it's, and somebody said this, I think Hovland said it actually afterward. He's like, it's the 15, 20 best players in the world, you know? And so yeah. that's probably an OWGR conversation that we don't need to have right now, but it's super impressive to go back to back. I think winning this golf tournament is harder than winning some of the full field, lesser, like lower tier events on the tour.
Here are the numbers, boys. So again, with the caveat that around the green play is wonky, there's small sample size. Not every event is measured, but everything from the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour that is measured. Here we go. Prior to the Open Championship, 57 rounds, he lost on average 0.52 strokes around. He lost a half a stroke per round.
That's so bad.
It's basically one of the worst rates on tour over those 57 rounds. Since then, 35 rounds, 30, and that obviously not including this week because we don't get the breakdown. He's gaining 0.4 of a stroke. So that is nearly a one stroke per round difference since the Open Championship. That is a huge improvement.
Yeah.
I think Rory and Kuchar led the world in this statistic in 2022 from January 1 to like 2 weeks ago. And they were only at 0.48. So he went from being, I mean, again, this is probably not emblematic of who he is on the whole, but he went from being one of the worst to close to the, like the best number in the world, which is really terrifying. If you're another top player, because a Hovland that is above average around the greens and with his short game is truly like going to be an awesome, awesome player.
Yeah, one of those. I was looking at what he did this during this calendar year. Before the Open, there were 14 events, and he gained strokes around the green in four of them, and they were all less than two strokes for the event. One of them was the match play, so you kind of have some. You know, he's very much on the losing side of things, which Rick's numbers point to as well. And since the Open. He's only lost strokes in two events since the Open, and he's gained sometimes significantly in every other event. I mean, that is a marked turnaround. A full stroke around. I mean, that is an insane jump.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it when you watch him. It's not just a guy who's hot. It's a guy who's made real technique improvements, and there's a confidence that's building from that, which is the biggest thing when you struggle with short game the way that Victor did, where you have some of those really scary shots. When they're not scary anymore, well, things change quick. Like Scottie Scheffler is never afraid of a pitch shot. yeah. with the tight lie. He's just trying to decide what shot is going to produce the best result so he can make it. I mean, he's trying to make them. And that is such a big difference from the mental side than I hope I don't mess this up. Which I'm not saying that Victor was thinking, I hope I don't mess this up. But that's what you feel. That's what you felt watching. What is going to happen here? And I would imagine he had some negative thoughts creep into his mind from time to time. So it's a big noticeable improvement that I do think is going to be significant heading into next year.
Hey, two things real quick. You kind of reference this off the top, Rick. We have to have some sort of unification around, like, Hovland has all these wins, but they're not PGA Tour wins, but they are OWGR wins, but then Cantlay, and I have no idea how many wins Cantlay and Xander have at all times ever. I mean, you've got the Olympics and the team stuff.
The answer is it depends.
We need the United Nations to like rule on this.
Because, you know, they should just be called hoists. If you hoist the trophy, that's a win, right? He's got seven hoists on. They handed him a trophy on the 18th green and he put it in the air.
Hoist is hard to say. And it would be like, you try to say it in different languages. It would be tough. I think podiums, I go back to the podium thing. Right. Where it's like, and maybe you don't need that for the Rocket Mortgage. Right. But for majors and for, I don't know, we don't need to talk about this right now, but it just the whole, like, I mean, I'm on these websites trying to figure out, well, so-and-so had like this, but it was in the 2023 season, but that was actually in 2022, but it didn't count. And it's like, what are we doing? Like, this is not good. And then the other thing is more of a question for both of you guys. And I'm curious, maybe especially in your answer, Rick, because you don't, like, I feel like the people that are on the show suck up all the oxygen. You don't get to talk a ton, but who are you, who right now to you, because I think this is a Hovland oriented question, has the biggest difference between how they're being viewed and how they will end up this time next year? So that doesn't necessarily mean who's going to have the best 2023, but rather like who's the most undervalued right now compared to what they will have accomplished 12 months from now.
Wow. Yeah. So Victor's the easy answer, right? Because there's always kind of the tie to Colin. And because Colin has two major championships, that's always a discussion that happens. And everybody kind of, I think, overlooks Victor. And then you say, okay, he's got seven wins, but right. Two of them are Mayakoba. One's the Puerto Rico Open. Two don't count for his PGA Tour resume. And two have come on the DP World Tour.
Yeah, so, again, get the United Nations on the phone, please.
Right. So it's kind of like he doesn't get the respect that he wants. So I think Victor's an easy answer. I also think I keep going back to Jon Rahm. You know, like, Jon Rahm was the number one player in the world. He beat, you know, the tweets from you, Kyle, that were he's only lost to X number of golfers over Y amount of time were outrageous. And he is getting hot now, and he might just have this massive 2023 while everyone's talking about Rory and Scotty and Liv and OWGR points and everything else in the world. Like, Jon Rahm might be the number one player by April.
Yeah, I like those answers. Some of this is hard because you don't know how people view Rahm, right? Like, we know how people, like clowns on Twitter that love Liv, view Rahm, or we know how each other views Rahm, but some of it is hard to kind of gauge, like, who actually is undervalued. I guess you could look at DFS stuff, you know, because that's like you got to put your money where your mouth is. I think Morikawa is in there for me, and we can talk about him. He finished what, fifth this week, I think, fifth or sixth. And it just feels like people went too far in one direction over the last 2 years, and he won two of his first eight majors, and people are like, oh, he might win 10. You're like, well, he's probably not going to win 10. But now it's almost gone, like, people have done a 180 too far the other direction. I think there's a middle ground with Morikawa that feels a little undervalued right now. Morikawa could win three times, including the Masters next year, and I would be not surprised at all. And I don't, it doesn't feel like he has that kind of energy around him right now.
I think this is a really unique time to ask a question like that, or to discuss, because it is hard to gauge where people are. Like, I'm looking at Jordan Spieth, and I don't really know where we are with him. And I don't really feel like this week answered any questions. There's kind of a, there's a yeah, but with all these guys. Sam Burns is the same thing. Like, where is Sam Burns' game? We don't really know. But another guy that jumps out to me as being underappreciated would be Patrick Cantlay. And again, is he just undervalued? Is he, one, is he undervalued? Two, is it just because he hasn't really played a whole lot in the fall? And three, I mean, he's number four in the world. Can you be undervalued if you're number four in the world? Do people know? Do people realize he's number four in the world? And one of the guys he's behind is Cam Smith, who's going to have some struggles gaining OWGR points. So, you know, like he's very soon going to be a top three player in the world. And what is his ceiling? What does his year look like next year? Again, this is all without great performances in majors. Is he going to take that next step? So I think it's kind of interesting.
I think the difference between a Hovland and a Cantlay for me is that Cantlay feels a little bit established, or like this is who he is, right? Especially in the majors where he hasn't done that much, which is maybe a little unfair because I think he's played actually in a lot fewer events. You might have that, Rick, than people imagine that he has because of the back injury, like all the different things he experienced early in his career. He actually hasn't played in that many majors or that many PGA Tour events. But Hovland, to bring it back to Hovland, who actually won this tournament, he feels more pliable. It feels like, man, if he can, I mean, you just said it, Rick, if he can flip his around the green play, his short game that much in 6 months, what could he be? You know, like that to me, it just feels like there's more pliability there than somebody like maybe a Cantlay or a Xander, who it's like, we get the same thing every year. Like, it's really good, but it's the same thing.
23 majors for Cantlay.
Which is crazy because you want to take a guess at how many PGA Tour events he's played? Remember, he technically turned pro in 2012.
I think it's only like 120 or something.
So how many majors, Greg?
23.
142 PGA Tour events over, well, 10 years as a professional. He wasn't like a full-time member of the PGA Tour, I think, until 17.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a really late start to his career.
Yeah. Which is weird because he was a prodigy, right?
Yes. It took forever to get going.
Yeah.
Hovland is more than halfway already to Cantlay's PGA Tour starts.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what I'm saying. It's like we sort of like don't view Cantlay the right way. But I still think Hovland is more pliable than somebody like that.
This event, the Hero World Challenge, was in pocket for a while for Victor, Greg, because he had multiple shot lead throughout the day. I think he got up to five at one point, but it got pretty dicey on 18. He gets fortunate that his drive bounces out of that bunker, but now he's up on top, and he described to Steve Sands afterwards that with that lie and sometimes when the club face gets shut down, things go left. Unfortunately, left at 18 is the water. And now things can get spinning very, very quickly for you.
Yes. I mean, and off the tee shot, you know, Azinger did a nice job of saying this, you cannot bail right. And that was kind of the reason why the bunker's no good. I think that's an unfortunate break to bounce out of the bunker. Yes. But you know, so easy to hit it there because you have water left off the tee as well, which makes for a great finishing hole because you got to step up and your only option is to stripe it down the middle like Scotty did. But the strange thing about this event, like you said, Rick, it's a five-shot lead, and he makes two birdies on 14 and 15, yet Scotty's picking up ground on him. And all of a sudden, you go to 18, it's a two-shot lead.
Yeah.
And then you hit it to the under the lip of a bunker, and then he hits it in the water. This didn't feel like Victor Hovland made mistakes to give this away until 18. Like, it didn't feel like it should even have been close on 18. And all of a sudden, it is. Like Scotty made three birdies in a row. Victor Hovland made birdie on two of those holes. And it got tight quick. It was a very, very bizarre feel watching this event. Next, all of a sudden, it's two shots, and Victor Hovland's taking a drop on 18. Mm-hmm. It got tight quick.
Victor's lying four on the green, KP, and Scheffler's chipping from a waste bunker, and he lips it out. I'm glad we were not on air for that. I was very concerned, and I said some things that would not be great.
Maybe you should have been on air. He was for sure trying to make that, right?
I hope so. And I think, like, yes.
Yeah. The way that he was sort of setting up for it, the type of practice swings he was taking, how far it went past the pin. I think Scottie Scheffler, I don't know if he thought presumed that Hovland was going to make his putt, which I guess you sort of have to do, or if he just didn't want to go to a playoff or what. But he was definitely trying to make that shot. And then he made a five, because I think the reason that Greg is saying what he said about how it felt just the weird at the end is because there were so many different numbers in play for both guys over, like, in the last even 10 minutes, right? Hovland could have made three from where he was at. He hits it in the water. All of a sudden he could make six. You know, and Scheffler could have made three from the waist area, and then he did make five. So there was just, it was a very, like, you don't usually get that many variables in terms of what score guys can make. You play a lot of holes, and it's like, I don't know, man, like, he's going to make four or five. He's going to make three or four, especially after a couple of shots are hit. And up until the end, it still felt like a lot of different numbers were in play for both guys.
And they both made five. I mean, it was just, it was so golf.
Yeah, for sure. Normal, very normal.
Normal sport too.
So Victor becomes only the second person besides Tiger Woods to successfully defend the Hero World Challenge. Seventh career win worldwide. We've already covered that. Congratulations, Vic. It's the yearly, like, Christmas bonus he gives himself. Just win a million bucks each December and it's all good.
How seven wins and how many OWGR starts? It's got to be like 70 or 75.
Probably a little bit more than that, because he plays more European tour events. I can tell you it is. God, I hate the new website.
Maybe 80. Maybe
is that actual event? No, that can't be right.
Actual OWGR events is 96.
Okay, that's higher than I thought, but still, that's a winning percentage of seven. A little better than 7%. Now, you can throw the Hero back at me. You can throw Mayakoba back at me. I don't care, man. Like, there's a lot of people that are playing in events like that that aren't winning 7% of their tournaments. And seven is Hovland needs to go win some memorials and some PGA championships and stuff like that. But 7% is 7%. That's super impressive.
When you throw one of those big ones on there on this resume, it just changes everything. I mean, everybody has events they win that are less than, you know, that are not the memorial. You can't play all memorials. So yeah. When a good player wins one of those events, sometimes we look at it like a bad thing until they've done it in a really big event. And then, well, they should have, you know, he should have won the Mayakoba. Oh, he should have won the Hero. He should. Yeah. And so it kind of changes that perspective.
You know who it's like, Greg? It's like when... It's like JT when he was winning all those events in Asia, like in the middle of October.
Malaysia, right?
Yeah. He won the CIMB 2 years in a row or whatever it was. And then you're like, okay, well, I ran into him at Riviera, and I was like, hey, you know, we were chatting, and I was like, hey, good luck getting that first win. And he had just won the fall before he had won the CIMB. Well, I didn't it's October. It's the middle of the night. And like, I just didn't remember. And I apologize later, but then he wins the PGA Championship 2017 and it, what you're saying is true. It almost, you're like, oh, this is JT, you know, it makes him JT. And I think the same, like if Hovland wins the Masters in April, how much differently do we view these, you know, all these resort course wins?
Completely different.
Scottie Scheffler was trying to track down Victor Hovland, obviously, because we just spent the first 24 minutes talking about Victor. That means Scottie Scheffler was unsuccessful in that attempt. But it was a 4 under 68, 66-68 on the weekend for Scottie to finish two shots back. And Greg, this just puts a bow on what was a massive year for Scottie Scheffler, right? 23 events, by my count, if I counted that correctly, 4 wins, 11 top tens, 9 of them podiums. Okay, we'll throw that in there.
Podium, so, baby.
He broke the all-time single season money. I mean, it was just a massive 2022.
It really was. And again, I think this is a really cool thing for Scottie Scheffler, because coming in, you have all these concerns about his putting, and we have for a while, and he just keeps on finishing on the podium. And this is the thing about that hot streak that he went through last spring, where he wins 4 events, he gets to world number one. We're wondering if that's real. And while he's not going to win four out of 6 events very often, what he is going to do is play like this, right? He's going to contend frequently. And he did before he won on the PGA Tour. He did that before last year. And he's continuing to do it after. So what I'm learning about Scotty, the more and more I watch him, is his baseline is just really, really good. And whether he's able to get the job done and hoist a trophy or not is one thing. But his play is so impressive. His TV green play, his short game is magnificent. I mean, the bunker shot he hit on 17, he was trying to make that one too. And he very nearly did. So he's really fun to watch. And when that putter gets hot again, and I'm sure it will, he's gonna win again. And he's probably not far away from win number 5.
His short game is filthy. Oh. It's so good.
It's he must try to be like, of course he's trying to make everything because he makes everything. Right. It's actually insane when he doesn't make it, it looks good until 1 foot in front of the cup or it touches the lip. It's just every shot I have full on confidence that he's going to stick it close.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like he's such a good ball striker, like a top, whatever, 15 ball striker in the world. But kind of like Rom, when you start throwing those hands on there around the greens, it's like, that's not fair, you know? Cause like, and JT's talked about this before. Like if you can go to a major and, or go to a big championship tournament and think like, I can get up and down from anywhere. Mm-hmm. It frees you up. It changes your entire week because then you start looking at different, at approach shots a lot differently, right? I can go after that pin. I can get up and down from there. Doesn't matter. And that's what I feel like with Scheffler. Now, whether that is actually, I mean, it was the case at the Masters, right? That's how he won the Masters. He made the shot on 3. He gets up and down from all over the yard there. And
on 1? That,
yeah, it's just, it's nasty. It's like a little bit of a, not a cheat code, but it's an add-on to somebody who's already one of the best ball strikers in the world. I'll throw this back at you, Rick. I did a little very informal, unscientific study of the, like, I wanted to know at the beginning of the week, does the hero matter? It's like this kind of weird one-off event, but it's got a great field. And so I looked at guys over the last 5 iterations of the tournament that finished in the top 3 and bottom 3. Like, how did they do the following year? Right. So if you look at the top 3 last year, it was Hovland, Scheffler, and Reed.
I think Burns, he might've been a tied 3rd.
Maybe Burns was up there. So for the guys that were like T3 like that, I didn't add them in. I just averaged what those guys did. So I looked at wins and strokes gained. So what you get is a lot of wins the following year from both the top and bottom, because everybody in this field is really good. But what you get every year is a lot of wins in the following year from the top three. So last year's top three had 6 wins in 2022. The year before that was 2019. So in 2020, the top three had 3 wins. 2018 going into 2019, the top three had 4. Year before that, they only had 1. That was kind of the outlier. Year before that, they had 5. So you can look at the top three in this field, Hovland, Scheffler, and Cam Young, and I think you can just pencil in like 3 to 4 wins. Now, I don't know what tournaments they're going to be in or where they're going to come from. That wasn't always true of the bottom three in this field. Like, you had years where they had 0, they had 1. You know, those were guys that potentially struggled going into the following year. But the top three in this field, you can just pencil them in for like a lot of wins in 2023.
It makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's a pretty good measuring stick. You've got 20 of the top probably 35 players in the world at worst. And I feel like, and I don't know what you guys think, for the most part, you should be having guys that are pretty, not peaking, but like they're playing good golf. They've played all year long. We just had the playoffs. If they've decided to play around the world or play more events in the fall, like they should be in pretty good shape. We had a lot of guys who were scorching hot. Like Rahm's got multiple victories coming in. Finau had multiple victories coming in. Xander had been awesome. Scotty just never stopped, right? Like, so it is a pretty interesting little measuring stick field.
I'm curious to know how that's going to go in future years. Like the stat you just had, Kyle, will be very interesting this upcoming year because all these guys are quote unquote top players.
Right.
And they're going to be playing in the 17 big events. And that doesn't leave a lot of room, maybe 5 to 8 other events where, you know, this field isn't all there, for wins. So if it happens again this year, I think that there'll be more impressive victories.
Yeah.
There are more impressive victories to be had.
For sure. And it's unscientific. It's not, you're basically just saying, are the top players going to win a bunch next year? Yes, of course. But there was a difference between finishing in the top of this field. And I think part of it is the season is like 3 week or I guess a month away. Right. So it's not as if I think it's not as if you're waiting another 6 months to get going. It starts soon. And these are the guys that are playing good golf right now and presumably will be starting in January as well.
We'll talk through some of these guys and I'll intertwine them into our horrific wagering week. We'll do that after a quick word from our partners. Did you know more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Spoiler alert, your feet don't have to hurt, and I know foot biomechanics can be complex, but solving foot pain should be simple. It's a signature orthotic shape of the super feet insoles that give you the comfort and support where you need it the most. It redistributes and reduces stress and strain on your entire body. Think about those long walks on a golf course and how uncomfortable your feet can get. Well, they don't have to. And Superfeet has helped millions of people worldwide experience the life-changing magic of comfy, pain-free feet. When your feet feel good, so do you. It is one of the most important parts of your overall health and well-being. And for a limited time, Superfeet is having its biggest sale of the year. Go to superfeet.com to save 25% off site-wide and get free shipping. Hurry, sale pricing ends June 5th.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And we're back. Horrible, gentlemen. We just got absolutely wiped here, but I think we can use this to spark a little bit of conversation. Patrick and I both faded Jordan Spieth, one with Max Homa, one with Shane Lowry. Spieth finished 15th out of 20, Kyle, and beat both Max Homa and Shane Lowry. So we got the Spieth struggles correct, but the other guys were worse.
That's tough. That's tough. Because there were other guys you probably could have picked that were even better odds in fading Spieth, right?
Yeah, almost. Yeah, almost certainly. Right.
Yeah, that's tough to look at. I did get the I put the only green on this board.
Yeah, and you found the guy. You faded the guy who finished dead last and did it with a T13, Matt Fitzpatrick over Tommy Fleetwood.
I also picked the guy that finished last to win. So don't listen to me. I'm a moron.
You got both Fitzpatrick and Fleetwood as winners.
Listen, we've already been over this.
Okay,
Greg.
All right.
Real quick, what happened was I picked one and then I went back to doing something else. I picked the other, went back to doing something else. And this is what I ended up with. So it's not good. The one that's most surprising to me, on my list anyway, is John Rahm, finished, I think T8. He was playing at a level that it's like, you put anybody in this field, I think he's going to finish in the top five. He'd been beaten by four guys in his last four tournaments, three at the CJ and then one at a European Tour event. And so it wasn't a bad week for him because, again, it's a pretty elite field. But I thought he would finish in the top three, four, five this week.
John Rahm went 73, 71, 68, 71, T8. Tom Kim, my top five, finished T10. Sungjae Im, which was Patrick's, finished T8 as well. So missed that by a couple of shots, and then no outrights because no victor on board. But, you know, there are some interesting names here, Greg, because I think we've said, I'm excited to see what Finau does in 2023. I'm excited to see what Colin Morikawa does. I'm excited to see what John Rahm does. Tom Kim's your X factor, bud. Right. Cool. Like what is he just going to be the man? We're going to get a full season of it like that. That one I'm excited for.
Yeah, I'm really excited for it, too. A couple of tough middle rounds there, but he played some nice golf. You know, the South Korea soccer team thing was entertaining. I do think it's safe to say we're going to get a lot of that this year. Especially if he plays the way he's been playing, which I don't think is far-fetched. I think Tom Kim's a really talented player, and I think he's going to go into this year with a lot of confidence. The President's Cup, winning on the PGA Tour twice. I mean, these things will give you a lot of confidence. And, you know, I bet if you did a study on similar to what you did with the Hero, Kyle, about a President's Cup or Ryder Cup and what guys get out of that, yeah, you'd get a very similar result. I just think for Tom Kim, this is going to be a very fun year. I don't know how many trophies he's going to have, but I think he's going to be in the mix a lot. I think he's going to be in the mix a lot in some big time events, which is going to be really cool to see.
Tom Kim might make $400 million in his career.
Well, okay.
Does that seriously?
I know. It was such a when you first said that, I was like, you're such an idiot. And then I was like, no, that could actually be true. Well, I mean,
remember the tour made that graphic Jim Furyk would have been, he would have almost been a billionaire or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And you're like, really?
Yeah.
And I, you know, if that continues, I mean, I love Tom Kim. I think he's a character in a sport that both needs them and has been devoid of them over the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, and has more of them now. And that's a good thing. But I think Tom Kim's a character and I think he's great. I think he's a little bit over. I think people overrate his golf ability because everything else is so good. Like he's so fun and funny and like endearing. He's a good player. He's not like a top 10 player in the world. Right. And so I'm curious to see how that goes when there's real expectations on him to perform. I mean, we've seen 100 guys, 1,000 guys do this where it's like you come out, there's no expectations. It's easy. It's fun. It's the best. I mean, this was Morikawa's year, right? Now there's expectations and it gets harder. You know, it's different. And maybe Tom Kim doesn't have those same expectations because Morikawa has major championship expectations. Tom Kim doesn't have that yet, but I'm hopeful for him, but I think the personality has a little bit outpaced the golf ability, even though I still think he's very good.
Tom Kim has 6 months and 17 days and still until he can legally drink alcohol in the United States. He's 21 in 6 months and 17 days.
That's crazy.
Twice a PGA Tour winner. What Kyle was referencing is that thing that the PGA Tour released where, yeah, Jim Furyk's career, if it started today, would have made like $600 million. Tom Kim, 20 years old, Greg. So in theory, he's got a couple of decades at this now. Yeah. You throw in the fact that he is he's South Korean, so there will be mandatory military service at some point.
Unless you win
a medal.
It's not a major, right? It's just a medal.
It's a medal. And then there's another criteria, whether it's like the Pan Am Games or something like that.
We've talked about this before. I know. There's definitely another way.
Yeah, there's definitely another way.
The good thing is for him that he has more obviously, considering what you just said about his age, he's got more time than anybody else. Than any of the other South Koreans to get this figured out. So there are some options. There's a long way to go. But at the same time, we've seen players have a majority of their career, a majority of their successes over by the time they're 30. It's like a trend in the game. These guys are rocket ships. But the one thing is, Tom Kim seems to me like a guy built for longevity, more so than... who's a good example of that? Like some of these young guys.
Yeah, throw a name out there.
Yeah, I was dying for whatever name was going to come out of your mouth.
Matt Wolf. You know, like when Matt Wolf, Morikawa, and Hovland came out. So, well, who's going to have the best career? Who's going to last the longest? Who's going to have the most success now? It doesn't feel like he's on that kind of a trajectory. I know everything got thrown out the window. But even Spieth. Right. Jordan Spieth had this major, major success early on and it's tapered off. Not that he's done. I'm not saying that. It's a much more common thing now to see Hall of Fame careers built before the age of 26. And then they don't necessarily continue that way.
Well, I think you're right. You are right. I think what's changed, it's not so much the compact nature of those careers. Cause I mean, Arnold Palmer won all of his majors in like 3 years, right? 4 years, whatever. It's just that there, but it was like when he was 29 to 33 or 30 to 34 or whatever. It's just that it's happening like that. That compactness is happening sooner. And so it just feels different when you're like 22 than it does when you're Arnold Palmer and you're 31. You know,
right.
I think the unusual thing is Phil being awesome for 30 years, is Tiger being tremendous for 20 years, is Rory being in the top 15 for 14 years. Those are the outliers. Like Dustin Johnson, 15 years, like the sustained success at that level for that period of time. That's actually, I think, unusual. By the way, are you predicting that Matt Wolf's high flyers are going to finish like bottom third in live next year?
Yeah, you heard it here first. Bottom
bold.
Third.
That's bold. Brave.
Not without some good free agent movement or some trades. Troy, you can drop that screen off. I'm tired of looking at
Please.
That. Please. So according to Google, an Olympic medal or a gold medal at the Asian Games will... Okay. create an exemption from military service. So then I said, well, I've got to go look up golf at the Asian Games. Okay. I was not disappointed. So I can't seem to find the 2022 results, which seem to have happened in September, but I can't find that.
Do they have golf?
They do. Yes, they do. Believe it or not, they do. Since 1982, golf has been an event at the Asian Games.
Okay. Do you have to be an amateur?
Kyle, you're asking me questions about things I know very little about. I don't think so. I'm sorry. Yeah, you're a smart guy. The event was open to amateurs only. Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Because these guys would obviously go over and try to take a crack at it.
Yeah.
You would think, like, you know, one of these guys would have. That makes a lot of sense.
Oh, this is gonna be. This is some deep stuff. We're in it right now. So I will just tell you, there's a team and an individual event. This is from 2018. So rewind your brain 4 years ago, and also remember that there were no professionals. If I told you that Japan won the men's team, could you come up with maybe a guy or two who might have won the gold medal in individuals there?
Was it somebody from Japan?
Yeah.
Takumi Kodaira?
No. Great.
Takumi Kanaya?
Okay. So no, but he was on the winning team. But he did not win the individual medal.
Do we even know who this is?
Yeah. But like only, I'm pretty sure just because Mark has talked about him recently.
Oh, the one that played for Mark.
Yep.
The guy that played for Mark.
Yep.
I can't remember his name.
Kita Nakajima.
There we go. Yeah, he's a good player.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he is. Also, this one's way deeper, but I feel like Kyle might get this because I know his brain's weird. 2018 women's individual gold medal. An amateur from the Philippines.
From the Philippines?
Yeah.
And you think I can get this?
I think you'll know who it is.
It's not Shang Shang, is it?
No.
Is it cool?
Nope.
No, she's from Thailand.
You'll both know who it is, but I don't know if you'll get there. The
Philip. Oh, it's she won the.
Yep.
She won the. Is it no?
Who?
It's she not. Won, it's not she, NASA, is it?
No, but
she won the U.S. Open last year.
She won the U.S. Women's Open. Yes.
Yes. I can't remember her name.
Yuka Sasso.
Ah,
see, I thought you might get close.
She won the U.S. Women's Open at like 21 or something.
Here was really the tricky part of that. So we are obviously deep into this, but she represented the Philippines until 2021, and now she represents Japan.
Okay. Yeah,
that's, I remember. That's what yeah. I would probably threw you off there.
That feels like a free pass.
It was the weird brain. Sure. It was a weird brain.
Free pass, no problem. Anything else? There were two. First of all, the DP World Tour just comes hot out of the gate. They just go double events for the first, like they have no break, right? And then they go two events week one, two events week two.
Yeah, it's insane.
That's living.
Yeah. The mixed team event is wait, is it a team event?
It's not a team event, right? But the men and the women play the same golf course at the same time.
Yeah, which is so cool. Like, I'm way in on that. I didn't watch any of it, but because it was on at, you know, 2 a.m. here. But yeah, it's cool. It's a fun little Australian swing for them. And yeah, it's crazy that they've already played four events. I mean, they were having their tour championship like a week ago.
Yes. 2 weeks ago, and then they've had four events since then. Yeah, like 8 days ago, and then there's been four events that have been played.
And they have some big ones early in the year, calendar year too.
The other little nugget that I saw today via Nosferatu. Nosferatu is already 3 weeks ahead. He's already projecting the OWGR for week 52, which is the end of the year, which is important because that's what gets you into the Masters. Currently on the outside looking in, well, not technically, but Brooks Koepka will be 51 probably, but he's in on PGA Championship.
Yep.
Louis, 52. JT Poston, 53. Scott Stallings, friend of the pod. Minwoo, Harris English, Burmeister. Paul Casey, 58.
We'll see you.
Yeah. Check you later. So yeah, fun stuff the next couple weeks.
Greg, do you have any OWGR takes?
Handfuls.
Any that you
absolute
want?
Absolute handfuls.
Make public?
Well, this event is really interesting to me, being an OWGR event. If I'm glad Victor won, because if Scotty won and became world number one, it would bother me. I just think it's such a relaxed environment, and the complication with the Hero World Challenge is near the top of the leaderboard. It's intense, and they want to win, and there's pressure, and it's a nice win. But towards the bottom of the field, you get such a big split, and I think that happens because of the meaning. And motivations change throughout the entirety of the week. So I think it's a very interesting event. I don't think it should get official world golf ranking points. I'm very curious about what Tiger said this week about OWGR and how it has to change. And how he said we have to change it. And I'm just curious what his involvement is in that, if any. If he's saying we as a sport, if he's saying we, the guys that were at the meeting, the PGA Tour meeting, I'm just very curious about that as well. But it doesn't seem like the brand new official world golf ranking point system is being very well received right now. And I'm curious to see how it plays out. Again, I think the one situation that happened in with the DP World Tour and the RSM Classic was a unique situation. And I tend to think that depth, 100, you know, duck sized horses is a harder thing to beat than, you know, a horse sized duck, as you said, Kyle. So it's a very interesting time in the OWGR history.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Has anyone ever liked the OWGR system? I feel like they're always complaining and always changing.
It's such a hard thing to, you know, a couple of years ago, I looked at how it all worked. I really tried to understand it. And I'm like, I ended up saying, this is a really good system. Like, it's really well done. It's well thought out. It's very complete. It's not perfect. But how could it possibly be perfect? The DP World Tour has had 4 events in the last 2 weeks. Right there. I mean, they're playing in different areas of the world at different times, and you're trying to take all the players in those fields and all the players on tours and in events that you've never even heard of, and you're trying to give every single person a ranking. You know, there's not like ranges. You're not 100 to 200 in the world. You're number 113. You know, that's just a crazy, it's a crazy complicated thing to try to do. And I think they've done a nice job of it.
I have two thoughts, Kyle, real quick. I'll just tee you up on this. Two things. If you're going to make a comment about the OWGR on Twitter, I feel like you should have to prove that you know how it works and how it's calculated. And two, if you say it's not a good system, you have to come up with a solution. You have to propose a solution. I hate the people just throwing it out into the void that it's a horrible system. I hate it. It doesn't work. It's not fair, with zero solution.
Oh. I agree.
Well, and what's ironic about that is that it's way fairer than it used to be.
Right.
And I was curious, Greg, are you talking about that you really like the OWGR as it's currently constituted, or the previous iteration of it?
The previous, I was talking about the previous iteation. And I did this because there was another time, and I forget what happened, but there was all this controversy around the OWGR. I said, well, what do they do? How does this actually work? Like, nobody really knows how it actually works except Nosferatu and probably Peter Dawson, right? But all of a sudden you look
into
it. Maybe
Nosferatu is Peter Dawson.
That would make a lot more sense.
Wow, could be.
Okay,
wow, so plot twist.
I've got this. That would be sick if Nosferatu is Peter Dawson.
I love that the only person who understands the OWGR system is a guy that we don't even know his real name, who just tweets out stuff on like every Sunday night.
Which, listen, maybe not great that's the case. He's awesome, or she. I don't know True. Who it is. Yeah. So there was this thing, and people have been complaining. People in this, even on our podcast, have been complaining about how international players are not going to have a path forward to compete on a global stage, like at the biggest championships, the biggest tournament. So Nosferatu tweeted this out today. On Sunday, early in the morning, I don't know where he or she lives. If it's Peter Dawson, I believe it's in London. But so based on the average strength of field of regular Asian Tour events, since the new OWGR system was adopted, if a player starts from scratch and plays 20 events per year, he would need roughly 20 wins over 2 years and 40 events played to get close to the top 50 in the world. Okay. So if you just look at that tweet, you're like, listen, that's not good. But the flip side of the argument is like, who is the person under the old system that really rose up the ranks in an Asian Tour or a Sunshine Tour or whatever? And you're like, oh, this new system is going to keep that person from rising up the ranks and competing on a global level now. Did anybody do that? Was anybody killing it on the Asian Tour, and they come over and start winning on like against the best players in the world in major championships?
Well, I don't know about that, but you want to know literally that's like Tom Kim. Now he has not. So here's Tom Kim's year. He played like 12 Asian events this year. Win second, a fifth on the Korean Tour. Then he plays a major, misses a cut. Then he plays an Asian Tour event, finishes 15th, 23rd at the US Open, third at the Scottish Open. Then now he's who we know. But that's the only example.
Okay. That's fair. That's a fair example.
If you would have asked me that like 2 months ago, I would have had zero answers for you.
Right. And that's a little bit.
Is he top 50 from those Asian Tour events? Like, did he move into the top 50 in the world?
He started the year. So he won his first start of the year. An Asian event, the Singapore International, that moved him to 89th in the world. He was 127 before that.
I think my point is like, that's an outlier.
For
what more often has happened in the past with the OWGR is you get guys cleaning up on the Asian Tour or the Sunshine Tour. I'm not picking on those two. Those are just the first two smaller tours that come to mind. And then they get into these championship level situations with the Rorys and the JTs. We've seen this at WGCs, right? And they get plastered. Like, they get destroyed because they were getting boosted by these like minimum tour points, right? Like they were cleaning up, but it was biased toward them, toward the international tours, because the OWGR was saying like, hey, the Asian tour, we got to have a minimum point level, even though objectively without bias, these players are not good enough to have earned this number of points in our events. And so you get players that were literally overrated in their world ranking, and they would get blasted by the actual best players in the world. That's 95% of those cases. So the OWGR fixed that, and a lot of people are mad about it. I thought this Will Knight's tweet was interesting, and I think it's true. One, there should be a way for players on international tours to move up the ladder and earn exemptions into majors. So that's talking about mobility across tours, right? Mobility across the world. And then two, winning a bunch on a lower tour doesn't mean you should be ranked as a top 50 player in the world. I think people look at wins and they're like, oh, well, that person's really good. Well, or maybe they're just beating a bunch of plumbers and firemen, a bunch of people like me and Greg and Rick, you know? And I think the new OWGR really gets at, like, this is, you want an unbiased look? This is it. These are your top 1,000 players in the world. But it does decrease the mobility of players to move around to different tours. And I think that's a real problem. Is it a problem that the OWGR should solve? Or is it a problem that the PGA Tour should solve, or the DP World Tour?
Both of those tours, Kyle, the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour, they have, we'll use a buzzword from this year, pathways to their tour that aren't through other tours. I don't think that every OWGR tour needs to be interconnected. There doesn't need to be a ladder from the Sunshine Tour to the PGA Tour. You can go play, any of us plumbers and firemen and anybody can get into a U.S. Open, right? That's a major championship. You can qualify for that. And at the same time, you can qualify for a PGA Tour event. You can go there's a Monday qualifier in every PGA Tour event, just about everyone, and Korn Ferry Tour events as well. So if you're one of those players where you feel like your game is really good and you're cleaning up on the Sunshine Tour, you don't need to look to the OWGR to get to the PGA Tour. There are other ways. There are other options.
I think I wish there were more options. Like, you know what? One of the coolest things of the year is open qualifying for the DP and PGA Tour. When you're at the John Deere and it's like, hey, top three, get in, or whatever the numbers are.
Yeah.
I think it'd be cool to have stuff like that to move between tours. Now, is the PGA Tour and DP World Tour incentivized to do stuff like that? Probably not. I don't know what their incentive would be, but again, we don't need to go too deep down this, but this is part of the reason that having seven different organizations in charge of golf is a real problem, because nobody, like, everybody just starts looking around and be like, why don't you do something about this? Why don't you do something? You know? And there's nobody that is like the organization that is going to do something. And it just is, it creates, it's a very messy situation when you have stuff like this.
It is probably worth noting that the Tom Kim example, I think, actually strengthens your point, Kyle, where it's like he did what the golf ecosystem asked of him. He just kept leveling up. The ecosystem is not created in a place where Tom Kim dominates the Asian tour and becomes the 12th ranked player in the world exclusively from that. Right.
Wait, say that last part again.
So the ecosystem is not set up in a way that Tom Kim just dominates the Asian tour and based solely on that becomes the 12th ranked player in the world.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's also like, if you want golf to be truly global, there should be mobility. I think more mobility between tours, but again, nobody like, Who's going to go and do that? Like, I don't know. It's a very complicated problem, and nobody is super incentivized to fix it.
Final thoughts. We got to get out of here, and we got to turn our attention to next week. But anything else that we missed? Going once. Normal Sport comes out next week.
Yeah, it does.
Yep.
No big deal.
I think we're shooting for either Monday or Tuesday. We got it cleaning up a few last minute.
Tomorrow.
Well, we've got the audio. We've got an audio book.
I love that.
An audio version.
I love that.
Awesome.
Shane Bacon read it. We might have an Easter egg in there of Kevin Van Valkenburg reading Gary Player's voice in a few situations, which will be great. So we're finalizing that. It's probably going to be like late Monday going into Tuesday, but anormalsport.com, and we'll have a brand new website launch. Book is good to go. We're printing them. They're at the printer right now. They'll be a little expensive, but it turns out printing a book is expensive.
I learned that somehow, not from anything I was doing, but I learned that like printing books is very expensive.
And we did it nice. It's there's some scarcity there. We only printed like 320 and they're like hardback, super nice. So I'm pumped about it. I'm excited to see it.
I'm probably like 40% through.
Okay.
So good.
There's a lot of footnotes. Are you in on the footnotes?
I'm up to footnote. I actually flipped to the end to see how many footnotes there are, and it's like 700 or something outrageous.
500. There's right 500. At 500. Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, 500. Because like the footnote, you know, the little number keeps getting bigger and bigger, and I'm like, this is amazing.
The footnotes are where the action's at.
Yeah.
If you pull up this latest comment, Troy, it says, will you ship internationally? Unfortunately, not. We will not ship internationally. It is extraordinarily expensive to ship a book internationally, it turns out. But that's why we have digital copies. You can just purchase one of those. So I'm sorry about that. I wish we could. I couldn't figure it out this year.
He can take it to his local Kinko's and make the first bootleg copy of it.
Somebody did that last year. They like printed it out and put it in a binder.
There you go.
Which is hilarious.
There you go. Okay. Next week, the match. Tiger Woods will apparently be playing in it with Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, and Jordan Spieth. We'll talk about that. We'll continue to keep our finger on the pulse of the world of golf. But for now, big thanks to producer Troy. Does all the hard work behind the scenes. Greg Ducharme. At The Real GFD on Twitter, Kyle Porter at Kyle Porter CBS, and you can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.